This is the Killer Innovations Podcast with Phil McKinney. Keep in mind that the information and opinions expressed in this podcast are Phil's and Phil's alone, and they don't necessarily reflect those of his past, current, or future employers. Now, here's Phil McKinney.
Yes, I know, it's been a long time since I put out an audio podcast. But recently, I was asked by a friend of mine, Brian Kramer. He's the founder of Pure Matter. Pure Matter is a marketing brand interactive media company based here in Silicon Valley. They do a lot of work for the companies here in the Valley. He holds his annual employee offsite this time of year. And Brian had asked me to come in and do kind of a lunchtime motivational talk about innovation and leadership. So I said, sure, I'd come on over. And we did it over at the Computer History Museum, which is a phenomenal facility. If you ever come out here to Silicon Valley, you have to go to the Computer History Museum. So this is his annual offsite. He asked me to come in and talk during the lunchtime. So I was coming in to do about a 1 hour speech. I actually came in at 59 minutes and 40 seconds. Now, how's that for timing? Now, rather than me just cranking and putting out the 1 hour speech, I'm going to chop it down into maybe 10 or 15 minute kind of chunks and put it out as the podcast. So what you've got here in this episode of the Killer Innovations Podcast is about a 15 minute segment. It's the introductory part, kind of lays the groundwork on some new work that I'm doing around how do you get people to think beyond the obvious, think beyond the things that are just kind of in our face, and how do you really unleash people's ability to not accept the standard answer or the standard assumptions about your business, your industry, your products, your services, or your customers, but how do you go beyond that? So sit down, have a good listen, get your notebooks out because you'll want to take some notes, and hopefully you'll enjoy this issue of the Clear Innovations Podcast. The challenges on the creativity innovation side does not change based on scale. It's the exact same problem whether you're a five-person working out of a garage or you're HP with 320,000 employees in 171 countries. The problems are the exact same. The scale of the problem may be a little different, but when it comes to being able to operate and innovate simultaneously, that becomes the challenge. The other thing that I've identified over the years also is that there's a lack of confidence for people to really be able to step out and really express themselves creatively. Now, in your case, you are what I would classify as a creative business. So yours is a little bit different. For you, the challenge is you're running into customers who aren't that creative, who tend to want to play it fairly conservative. And so how do you help the customers get the confidence into on the creative side, which is another part of the challenge. So hopefully some of this that I'll share. One of the things, I'm also into photography, but of course, see, Brian and I are polar opposites. He's an Nikon guy, I'm a Canon guy, so we always get into this. We always get into this discussion. But one of the things I collect is images of what I would call like obvious signs. Things that you read them, they're kind of like, okay, why would you even put the sign up? Right? I've got one sign, one image. I should have left it in here. I took it out just to trim the presentation, but I got one sign that says, literally there's a solid granite wall. The sign is like 6 inches from the wall, and it says, road ends here. Or the other sign that says, one way, and the arrows are pointing both directions. How does that work? Right? So part of what I'm going to focus on is how do you get beyond the obvious? Part of the challenge with a lot of organizations is we kind of get caught in this, you know, we always done it this way. Here are kind of the rules and the assumptions of how we operate. Clients, you know, in my case, my clients are other parts of HP where I'm trying to help them innovate within their products. Oh, no. We've always done laptops this way, and we've always done phones this way, and we've always operate. And the question is how do you push people to get comfortable to step beyond the obvious, to do the next thing? So, and the way I argue it is doing the obvious is really doing the same thing over and over and over again, which means you're boring, which means you're average. And who wants to be average? Average is not success in today's economic condition. You just kind of blend in. It's how do you stand out? How do you do something that's beyond what anybody else would expect, beyond what anybody else would anticipate? But the point is, you know, being average is not what will lead to that long-term success. It's not about, you know, being like everybody else. And part of the challenge
is we've all been taught conformity, right? When you're in school, what's the one thing you want to be? You want to be like everybody else, because if you stand out, guess what? You get pummeled by all the other kids in the classroom. And kids get taught this through the entire educational process. But then you get out into the work world, and being average just puts you right smack dab in the middle of the pack. So now you have to unlearn that conformity and really step out and go beyond being obvious. Now, this also plays out in the business world. How many people are familiar with army ants? So you're familiar with the army? Have you heard the army ant story? So army ants are great and highly efficient, but they're programmed to do one thing: follow the ant in front of them. And what will happen is if the lead ant falls back and finds the tail of an ant that's in its colony, it creates what we have here is what's called an ant mill. And these ants will literally do what they're programmed to do: follow the ant in front of you. Now, in most cases, in the case of an ant mill, those ants will literally walk themselves to death. It takes about 3 days, and you will wipe out the entire army ant colony. Now, how do you break the ant mill? So this little simulation will start over again so you can see it from the beginning. But the way an ant mill breaks, or how a colony survives, is you have a broken ant. One ant that doesn't know what it's supposed to do, which is follow the ant in front, and it goes, no, I want to go over here. And it breaks off from the ant mill, and what do all the other ants do? Follow that ant. And then all of a sudden, that ant mill breaks apart, and the colony survives. So the way the businesses need to survive is you need to have those broken ants. You need to have those ants who say, you know something, the rules of which I'm programmed to do, or the way we operate, I'm going to step out and I'm going to do something different. I'm going to break away. I'm going to help my clients break away and therefore not get caught in the ant mill of whatever their industry is or what their organizational problems, challenges are, but how do you break away? So the rule number one is break the rules, right? Now this is a little, believe me, when I do this talk inside of HP, all the executives just kind of like have heart convulsions, right? Because having 320,000 employees running around in total anarchy is not a good thing, right? But you have to recognize what is it you can challenge and what is it you can't challenge. And we're going to walk through. I got a couple of quick little exercises I think you'll find interesting. Now, here's the other challenge inside of organizations. There's what people inside of any organization that I call the corporate antibodies. So we all know what antibodies are, right? Those are the cells inside your body that attack any form of infection. Anything that's kind of out of the norm. We have corporate antibodies. These are the people that come after any new idea. Something's going to disrupt the organization. Oh, no, we've tried that before. Oh, no, that's not going to work. Or, oh, that's not going to give us, you know, an HP, the big one is, oh, that's not going to give us a big enough return on our investment, right? And so the challenge becomes then is that you've got to recognize that these antibodies exist. And in some cases, you're the antibody. You may not realize it. It may be a facial expression. It may be in a rejection to somebody else's idea because it wasn't your idea, or it was your idea, but now they're pitching it differently. Or it could be you just don't think it's going to work, but you don't even give it a fair hearing. I mean, I have to catch myself. I'm in the innovation space. I talk about innovation. I write about innovation. And I even have to catch myself from being the corporate antibody because I literally get thousands of ideas a year pitched. Looking for budget funding for me to support inside of an organization. And I even have to catch myself from being that corporate antibody, being that one that's going to say, you know something? That's not a good idea. We're going to go off and do something else. So the key is how do you catch yourself? And how do you make sure that you give a fair hearing to the ideas? And I'm sure we've all either have said or have heard any of the antibody statements. Like, oh, we've tried that before and it didn't work. Don't rock the boat. The market's not ready. You know, this is one that always gets inside my organization, or you'll never get approval, so don't even try. So you're throwing, you know, cold water on somebody else's effort. You can't afford that, or it's not a new concept. The key here is recognizing that these antibodies exist and to think differently about, rather than just having random ideas, what work can you do up front about putting more thought behind an idea before you pitch it? And how do you pitch an idea? Now, you guys pitch ideas all the time to clients. In my organization, I have to teach people how to pitch. It's amazing how few people can really pitch an idea. And I will talk to you a little bit about how we do that. So going beyond the obvious requires that you got to think differently. You almost have to unlearn what it is you've learned in the past. We talked a little bit about schooling, and we kind of learned this conformity path that we're on, and you have to kind of unlearn that. So here's a little test. So what's half of 13? 6.5, right? Now, that's what we're taught in school, right? In fact, in the educational system, right, what I affectionately refer to is we are producing the world's greatest test takers because we're taught, give a question, provide the answer. But the fact is that we teach the kids in school today about here's a test, calculate the answer, there's an answer, put the answer in on the test, and you're done. Now, the challenge is when we get out in the real work world and we're challenged with a question or challenged with a problem, what are the odds that there's only one answer? Like zero, right? You have multiple choices, multiple approaches, multiple ideas you can bring to the table to solve that problem, right? So back to what's half of 13? 6.5. Well, that's one answer. What are other answers? Well, if you round, it could be 6 or 7. You know, if I wrote the word out, like in this case, so it's T-H-I-R, split it in half, T-E-N. Roman numeral 13 is 11 and 2. Roman numeral 13, you split it horizontally, is 8 and 8. Lots of possible answers. So rather than stopping at the first obvious answer, how do you make sure that you challenge yourself to go beyond that obvious answer and look at other possibilities? And then the challenge that you have then is you look at all those possible answers and then determine what's the best approach. And guess what? Be willing to be wrong. Now, in a case, I have to, at the same time, I have to kind of quantify this point with kids who are still in school. Don't experiment on your test. You know, because that will not work out for you. But it is about preparing them for the work world. So every year, for instance, we bring in about 250, 300 interns for all of the Bay Area for us. In my organization, we'll average between 6 and 12 interns. And one of the things I see with these interns is they come in, and what they've been taught is that there's one correct answer. So any problem presented, there's one correct answer. So we purposely give them projects that don't have a single correct answer. And then we watch these poor interns work themselves into a frenzy trying to find the one correct answer. Because what we're trying to do is unteach them this problem of get to the answer, you're done, move on to the next problem, versus look, you have to be able to broaden that scope. You have to broaden what you're looking for. Another rule, for instance, is, you know, don't start a company in a recession. Right? You know, you got a job and the market's down, hold on to your job. Don't start your job in a recession. Every one of these companies started either in the Depression. In the case of HP, HP was actually started during the Depression, or in the downturn of the recession, such as Electronic Arts. So every one of these companies started by breaking the rule of when did you start? So the key here is break that, you know, are these rules that everybody kind of, you know, feels. Oh, you got a job, hold on to your job, don't step out, don't take that risk. But here's people, you know, here's individuals, you know, Walt Disney and Bill and Dave and General Electric and, you know, et cetera. But you look at any of these up here and you think about what would have happened if someone at probably the worst time in the market, stepped out and broke the rule. So it's really not about having the answer. It's not about having that first answer. It's really about how do you get beyond the obvious. So the whole core of what I talk about and what I teach, both inside of my organization but also to other corporations, is really about asking questions. How do you ask questions to get beyond the obvious? How do you ask questions that cause you to reveal something or think about something that you'd never thought about? And it's built around this concept called killer questions. Killer questions are different from normal questions. Normal questions, you can ask a question and you come back with that single answer. Half of 13, 6.5, correct? You know, get an A on your test. But how do you ask questions that you sit there and you think about and you go, I don't know the answer to that question. I'm going to have to go and do some research before I can come back. That's a little bit why the logo has a double cloud in it, because it causes you to have to kind of cycle through it a few times before you can really think about it from the context of the questions you're being asked. Mike, the whole point here is that if you ask better questions get you better answers, better ideas, which then translates in to impact in the organization. Poorly worded questions get you poorly worded answers. I mean, think about it from a brainstorming session, right? In most large organizations, the brainstorming session consists of some executive walking in and saying, hurry up, come up with a product idea. Okay, what the heck does that mean? Who's the customer? Do we have a target? What's the problem we're trying to solve? So now you get 10 of your best and brightest people to come into the brainstorming session. What's the quality of the ideas? Probably fairly weak. Why? Because when we're asked a question, just as we talked about half of 13, as soon as you answer the question, what do? You stop thinking about it. You stop looking. Kind of the analogy of you've lost your house keys, right? So you're tearing the house apart, looking for your house keys. You find your house keys. And then someone says, so where'd you find your house keys? Oh, I found them in the last place I looked. Well, who keeps looking after you find the house keys? Same thing with questions. Poorly worded questions, as soon as the human brain thinks it's answered it, come up with a product idea. Oh, we ought to do it in blue. Okay, I'm done. That's a product idea. Versus asking questions that force them to dig beyond.
As with all episodes of the Killer Innovations podcast, this content is licensed under Creative Commons, non-commercial, non-derivative with attribution, which means you can take this podcast and you can share it with others. What you can't do is charge for it. It's my way of paying it forward. In my early part of my career, I had the benefit of having a phenomenal mentor, Bob Davis. When I asked Bob how I could pay him back for all the time and investment that he made in me early in my career, his answer was, you can't. The way you pay it back is by paying it forward. Share your knowledge and your expertise with others later in your career. And my objective with this podcast is to do just that. And by producing these podcasts and sharing it with you, allowing you to learn from my experiences, but also to allow you then to share that with others. So the only thing I ask is that you do share with others. Let other people know about the podcast. Now, if you have any questions about innovation, creativity, leadership, corporate antibodies, frustrations from trying to convince your management team the role and the importance of innovation, go ahead and drop an email to me at feedback@philmckinney.com, and I'll answer those questions, or I may actually use them in future upcoming podcasts. So again, any questions, concerns, how to do something, drop me an email, feedback@philmckinney.com. Also, let's connect on the social networking side. I'm available on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Google+, you name it, I'm on it. I'm in all of those services listed just under as Phil McKinney, no spaces. Drop me a note, let's get connected. That way you can also get a little bit of insight and track what I do on a day-to-day basis with regards to innovation, creativity. I'll also publish onto the social networking sites typically first the upcoming schedules of speaking and appearances that I've got coming up on my schedule. And I'd love to be able to share that with you and invite you to be able to actually attend the workshops and talks when I'm able to do that. So connect on the social networking sites. Twitter, Google+ are probably the two most active that I'm on right now. And I'd love to share that with you and also to connect with you and see what you're doing. Again, thank you for taking the time out of listening to the podcast. Subscribe on iTunes or any of the podcast sites. The content is out there. And again, feel free to share it with others. And if you have feedback, drop me an email. Thanks a lot. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.